John DeJerians is our first guest, joining us as the founder of MarketRebellion.com, the financial news, education, and subscription site. Let's talk about business, John. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for having me back.
Where are you, by the way?
I am back in Chicago. I was skiing last week when I missed you out in Park City, Utah, and happy to be back in Chicago, but that was a nice little break to get out to Utah for some powder.
When you go to another state, I think all of us wonder about that. What was it like? What did you see? How is that city or state different than our city and state? Did anything jump out at you?
Not particularly. I mean, they have social distancing and mask wearing required when you're in lines, when you're in a restaurant, but not when you're actually skiing. But when you're riding the lifts or waiting in line, you do have to have that. So I think they were operating at about 50 to 75%, the restaurants, and they were buzzing. There was a real positive atmosphere out there, and it was nice when I was out here in Chicago later in the week to see that so many of our restaurants have put on a pretty good display, despite the fact that some of their service is still outside. But the indoor service, you know, they're adhering to the rules, and it's working.
Yeah. Market was sure working yesterday, best day since last June. It's not as robust today. It's basically flat, down a little bit, Steve said a moment ago. But what's your take on the markets today?
Yesterday it was just a wonderful pop to the upside after we reversed course on some of the aggressive pricing of those bonds. The bonds were being sold hard last week, and the bond yield on the 10-year hit 161. A lot of us didn't think we'd see that by the end of the year, and here it was just 2 months in, and we'd already seen it. Now we've pulled back, even though it's up slightly today. We've pulled back into the 140s again, the yield, that is, of course, for the 10-year bond, and I think that's a good thing. We need to not prompt the Fed to do something through getting a little overzealous with the market, which is an optimistic and forward-looking instrument, basically saying things are really great right now, because then that might also discourage some of the stimulus that probably an awful lot of Americans really need.
When you say bonds were at 161, you mean that the yield was 1.6%?
Yep, 1.61% was the high last week. It pulled back now to, like I say, into the 143 range. So that's a pretty big move back down, not as fast as the move was to the upside. But nonetheless, I think that was really one of the triggers for the sell-off last week. And the fact that we eased back from that was why I think we saw cooler heads prevailing on Monday.
What are you looking at today? What sectors or stocks have caught your eye?
Wow. Rocket. This is the mortgage company, Rocket Mortgage. You know, Mr. Gilbert, Dan Gilbert, who owns the Cleveland Cavaliers and has started a number of successful companies. This is both a tech company, Rocket is, as well as, of course, a mortgage finance company. And yesterday, our systems picked up really strong institutional interest. And then moments later, we saw that the Wall Street Bets crowd, the same crowd that lifted up GameStop, was attacking this one because they noted that there was a lot of short interest, meaning people that had sold the stock in hopes of buying it back cheaper. They certainly weren't. The stock's $11 higher today than where it was yesterday. It was $23.50 when they were buying it yesterday. Just now it's $34.50 just seconds ago, and it has had a big pop. And that's that same crowd that piled in to GameStop a month ago. Now they're into this one.
Mm. TripAdvisor is up, which is, I think, for those of us that are looking that things are going to get better travel-wise, maybe. I wonder if that's a bellwether. I have just a minute, but
sure.
Do you think that means more than just how TripAdvisor is doing, but that sort of forecasts how the travel industry is going to do?
Yes, I do. I think Expedia, isn't quite seeing that outsized move, that 10% move that you're talking about in TripAdvisor, TRIP, nor is Bookings.com, which owns a whole bunch of sites. But nonetheless, these guys, TripAdvisor, got an upgrade from Citi. They said that it was a thesis changer, and they more than doubled their price target from $29 to $62 for TripAdvisor. So really good news there. I don't own that, but I do own Sabre, S-A-B-R, which is one of those companies that's behind a lot of the ticket pricing and hotels and all the rest. Sabre's one of those original companies, and that's my opening play right now.
John Najarian, founder at MarketRebellion.com. Okay, John, glad you're back. We'll visit next week.
Thank you.
Dave Harvey is our next guest, Vice President of Southwest Business. Dave, thanks for joining us on WGN.
John, thank you for the opportunity.
I was thinking about you, anticipating you were coming on, just as our friend John Najarian was talking about TripAdvisor, how they've seen a real jump. I said, well, do you think that just anticipates, you know, maybe is that an optimistic sign about travel? Are you optimistic about travel in 2021?
You know, we are optimistic. There's definitely a degree of patience you have to have here. The last 12 months for the travel industry has really been breathtaking, unlike anything we've seen before. And the demand kind of ebbs and flows with what's going on with COVID cases. And it's not even at the national level. It's also very regionally focused. But it does look like we've got good momentum with the vaccination schedule. COVID numbers are moving in the right direction. We need to be safe, need all the health and well-being. But we are starting to see some positive signs as we kind of get out here into the spring and summer.
Are there some numbers you can share with us, like bookings or passengers, or how do you gauge how well it's going for you all?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, no specific numbers, because it does change so rapidly, as we've seen time and time before, just when you think you're getting some positive momentum.
Yeah.
So take back Labor Day last year, September, October, there was actually a pretty healthy rebound. And then kind of going into the holidays, clearly the COVID numbers got out of the unhealthy range. And then there was a lot of just kind of quarantines and shelter in place. And then the demand quickly pivoted the other direction. But, you know, January, February are seasonally lighter months anyway. March tends to be, a peak. And then, of course, summer is the peak of the peak. So you would expect a little bit of uptick. But I'd say we are cautiously optimistic in what we're seeing with demand.
Is March looking good for Southwest?
You know, it's all relative. John, and I'm not trying to dodge the question. It is a little bit of cloudy, because you're trying to compare off of, okay, what did you experience in 2019? And then what did you see with March last year, when that's really the roller coaster of demand started with the big drop off. But current course and speed, I think we're just encouraged with the positive momentum, the positive builds.
Does the passenger demand tend to mirror whatever the public health officials are saying? So if they're saying, hey, the rate is down, we can cautiously go out, then people are more likely to buy tickets and travel?
Well, the overall narrative definitely kind of impacts. We do a lot of customer surveying to try to understand, you know, where are people's comfort level, confidence level in travel. And what's interesting is, I think the airlines, the hotels, a lot of the different major journey steps in travel have done a great job with their health and wellness and distancing and cleanliness. Ours is the Southwest Promise. But you have to have a place to go to on the other end of the line. So whether it's leisure, you know, right now what's hot is beaches and mountains. On the business sector, which I'm ultimately responsible for, a lot of corporate headquarters just simply haven't opened up yet. Regional offices, the conferences haven't started back up. So, people are just kind of making do with Zoom and other kind of virtual platforms. But there is a ton of pent-up demand as you kind of look to the back half of the year.
Boy, folks are going to have to get out and start shaking hands again, right? Or bumping elbows.
Indeed. If you look at what the objective of a meeting is, if you're trying to negotiate, persuade, close a deal, build a new relationship, so kind of business development, and you try to say, hey, am I going to be successful in doing this over a virtual platform or face-to-face? John, it's not even close. People have got to get back out there. We're kind of working off of borrowed time of those relationships that we had for years, mm-hmm. but that only takes you so long. You got to get back out there and take the relationship to the next level or go win new business.
Well, for people in the Chicago area, Southwest is really looking more attractive all the time, right? Because I can book out of Medway and O'Hare.
Indeed. Actually, this month is 36 years. We started at our anchor down in Chicago Midway, the South Side, on St. Patrick's Day. No better day to start that back 36 years ago. So that holiday was taken. So we actually started 2 weeks ago on Valentine's Day on the north side of Chicago O'Hare, and it's coming out of the gate very, very strong. So we're pleased. Five great markets: Baltimore, Nashville, Dallas, Phoenix, and Denver, and then Orlando on the weekends. And that's just another great success story. We've got a built-in customer base mm-hmm. in Chicago that knows us, and now we just give them more flexibility. They can pick the north side if that's their airport of choice.
Does my destination determine which airport I use? If I'm going to go to Phoenix, then does that mean I go to O'Hare?
Yeah, the way to think about it is every market O'Hare has, Midway will have as well. Midway is one of our largest operations from coast to coast. So it'll have some nonstops that O'Hare won't. But if you're trying to go to one of those five initial destinations I just mentioned and O'Hare is your airport of choice, you can hop there. Or if you want to go to one of those kind of secondary markets, you can get down to Midway, and it just gives you even more breadth across the network.
How tempting has it been to waive some of the perks that people know Southwest for, like bag fees and stuff like that? If revenue is down, did anybody have a conversation about anything like that, or is this going to be the same Southwest I've come to know?
It really is the same Southwest. So we almost feel like we would be doing a bait and switch. Our business proposition to the customers, they know our warmth, our friendliness, our frontline team is just kind of unparalleled. But it's all about low fares. It's about our Rapid Rewards program, the most rewarding program that's out there. And then the flexibility, no bag fees, no change fees, all the things that all the customers have grown to love. So, there are no plans to change any of those kind of major perks or features. And we think that really is a big differentiator. It sets us apart. Other airlines, to be candid, are out there taking things away from the customer. And you know what you're going to get with Southwest Airlines.
Well, I think the frustration with some of the other airlines is the things that, in fact, I am due, I'm having to fight for. Fees that I don't have to pay or tickets that should be honored. And it shouldn't be sort of this labyrinth of websites and phone calls for me to get what I paid for. I think that's the big frustration for people right now.
Yeah, absolutely. There, because of the pandemic, there were a lot of tickets canceled back in March, April, May. And we just said, we're going to be uber flexible. All those funds are good. And we're going to push it all the way out to September of 2022. So 2.5 years, when folks are ready to return to travel, Southwest is going to be there. Their funds are going to be good. We also extended a lot of our loyalty tiers. So if you had A-list preferred or companion pass, and you just weren't traveling and getting those qualifying points, we extended those for an extra year as well. So when folks are comfortable, we're going to be ready for them, John.
What are you doing with the center aisle then, or the middle aisle? I mean, what is the seating arrangement like on a Southwest plane?
Yeah, so back at the end of last year, we did open up the middle seats. We were one of the carriers that blocked the middle seats, kept that open longer. And we really just wanted to watch the data and the research. So we've got a strategic partnership with Stanford School of Medicine. Harvard has now released kind of multiple papers on it. And, early days in the pandemic, the airlines just really didn't know. So we weren't ready. We wanted to provide a little bit of extra distancing on board. But what the research and the data really showed, that the mask, that's the best tool we all have to combat COVID, but that coupled with all the cleanliness that was going on with the planes, literally 6 hours every night, plus cleaning it in between all the turns throughout the day. And then what's called a HEPA filter, a lot of people even have them at their homes, but it's a hospital grade, medical grade filter that's literally getting 99.97% of all the airborne particles out of the cabin, and that is happening. People don't realize this. The aircraft is already cycled every 2 to 3 minutes with fresh air from outside of the cabin, and it's continuously rolling through these HEPA filters. So, I mean, it is so much more safe to fly in an aircraft than even going to your local grocery store, your local restaurant. I mean, one study even said you're more likely to be walking down the street and get struck by lightning than contracting COVID on board a U.S. aircraft.
Well, if you think about it, the reporting hasn't been there. I mean, as much as we microanalyze every instance of COVID, we have not heard of instances of people as a result of flying commercially, and more people are, of them contracting COVID. I got an email last week from a listener because I frequently ask them, what's your travel experience like? And the person said, oh my God, I've never seen such a clean airplane, which I guess underscores your point that if you want to make people feel safe, if you want them to be safe, then really scrub that thing. And they said they've never been happier being inside a plane just because of how clean it looked.
Yeah, the word of mouth, I mean, of course, all the carriers and hoteliers and ground transport are doing a good job kind of getting the word out. But it's okay, I'll believe it when I see it. Yeah. And that word of mouth is going a long way. I talked about we pull a lot of our customers, and rightfully so. They're a little bit nervous. They're, you know, hey, I don't know exactly what the experience has been if they haven't flown since COVID. And then, John, we turn around and survey them again after they've experienced our Southwest promise. And it's that testimony right there. They're over the moon. I will do this again. I've already made my next booking. I'm telling my friends and family. So we need to keep getting the word out there.
Well, here's spring, and it's good to hear the optimism in your voice, sir, because I think a lot of us are itching to travel. And when I feel safe and ready, and when you feel safe and ready, and when you feel safe and ready, it's good to know that you guys are ready for us out there. So that makes me feel better about this.
Absolutely. We got the north side and the south side covered. So Chicagoland, we're ready to serve you.
O'Hare and Midway. Hey, let's visit again, Dave. Good. And how many employees in the Chicago area are we talking about now?
Yeah, we're up to about 5,000 supporting Chicago Midway with how large of an operation. And then out of the gate, we've got about 80 or 85 starting with the initial 16 flights. One other kind of note, I was actually there for the launch the morning of Valentine's. They barely got out with the storm that was hitting you guys. But we're on T5, which a lot of people think of that international terminal. It was so easy to get in and out of T5 on O'Hare. So and we've got the wide hold rooms, a lot of seating. So we've got some room to grow there. So we're excited about that. But what was fun is of these 80 to 85 employees, half of them came from Chicago Midway. But the other half, there's a bidding process where they come across the entire Southwest system of over 100 airports, and they were coming home. These are folks that may have been with Southwest 20, 30 years. They've been waiting for this day to go back to the north side of Chicago and serve O'Hare. So it's just a fun to see the twinkle in their eye getting to come home and probably end their careers serving Chicago O'Hare.
Dave Harvey, Vice President of Southwest Business, southwest.com. Nice to talk to you, Dave. Good luck to you all, and thanks for joining us today.
All the best, John. Thank you.
On the Wintrust Business Lunch. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. I'm John Williams. Our next guest is Chris Holloway. This is interesting. He's the CEO and founder of House of Trade. You know how they say if you've got a business or an idea, you ought to be able to express it in a sentence in an elevator ride? House of Trade is a modern trading platform for sneakers and luxury goods. House of Trade is a modern trading platform for sneakers and luxury goods. Chris, I don't think I know everything, but I think I now know what you do. What a good idea.
Thank you.
How long has House of Trade been in existence?
So House of Trade actually started in April 2020, like right in the heart of the pandemic. But the idea came about November 2019.
So then you finally got it up and running in the midst of all of that. And tell me a little bit more about it. So if I post a picture of my, say, cool shoes, I might be able to get somebody else's shoes. Is that what happens?
That's like the low, like a high level version of it. But I can break it down and explain it to you. So what we do is, so say you, we're being us being in Chicago, say you want a pair of Jordans. And You post your shoes up there, and what happens is somebody sees the shoes that you like or that they like your shoes, and what you do is what we do is we facilitate that transaction. So we make it, we authenticate it, make sure it's safe and secure, and make sure that you get the product that we say it is, that you say it is. So say you're trading the Jordan 1s and the shoe is in a brand new condition. We make sure that shoe is what it says it is. So what we do is you ship it to us, we authenticate it, and then we ship it to the person, and then they do the same thing on their end.
What's my danger of sending you the shoe and I don't get it back, or I get a shoe that I don't like, right?
Yeah, so to protect you against that, so what we do is we make sure that the person who's sending it says what they do. So if they don't send what we say it is or what they say it is, then there is a transactional discretion on their account. So they get like a strike upon their account so that that doesn't happen to you and your product is safe.
And if I see somebody with even one strike, maybe two strikes, then I'm probably not inclined to trade with them, right?
Absolutely, correct.
Kind of like your rating on an Uber or some other platform.
Yeah, like an Uber or like an eBay or something like that.
How do you make money?
So we make money through the transaction and authentication of the shoes.
How much is that? What does it cost for me to have you facilitate this?
Yeah, so the cost per transaction is $30.
And then including
the shipping fee as well. But you just pay the shipping on one end, not on both ends.
What about other items? So you mentioned Air Jordans. I get that. Are people exchanging dresses or handbags? What else do you look at?
That's a good question. So right now we're not exchanging any other items. We haven't expanded our platform yet. That's a later down the line. Right now we're just focusing on sneaker and sneaker enthusiasts because me personally and my partner, that's what we know the best. We don't want to extend the platform too fast, too soon, and then cause any bad transactions, if so to speak.
Yeah, sure.
Because I can't look at a Louis bag and tell you, hey, that's fake or real yet. But the goal is to add people, hire people who can do that, and then so we can be able to facilitate trades with other things like bags, watches, and other luxury goods.
And I guess the value, you know, like who's getting the better deal here is up to the two people. You don't care if what you're giving up is worth $100 and what that guy's giving up is worth $900. If the two of you want to make a deal, that's up to you, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's the beauty about it is that it allows people to trade and not have to worry about the monetary value of what it is. Because what we really harp on is the nostalgia of it. So if it's a shoe that, hey, this is the first basketball shoe that I ever played in, sometimes it doesn't matter what the price is to you. It's just something that you want because it has that sentimental value to you.
Yeah. However, that value may not be shared by somebody else. If I don't care if you played in those Jordans. I want them to be nice and clean. I want them to be pristine, say. Is there a market, though, for that? Like, just stay on Jordans for a second. Mm-hmm. If people are trading that shoe, has it never been worn? Is it in the box, like a baseball card? Or has it got moderate use and the next guy also wants to wear it?
There's a few levels to that. So there are, so what we call is dead stock in the sneaker community. So dead stock is shoes that are never worn, never tried on. They're in the box in pristine condition, just like a mint tin baseball card. And then there's gently worn. And then there's absolutely beaters, which shoes that usually we don't trade. Beaters, which shoes are like you wear every day. They probably have some smell or stench to it. So a lot of the shoes are gently worn or brand new in the box. So people do trade gently worn sneakers with each other.
What are the hot shoes? What are people looking for?
So the hot shoes right now are always and will be Jordans. Right now are Dunks, Yeezys. So Nike and Adidas are really the strong point. And then New Balance is making a strong push as well. They're being a big player in the community, in the sneaker community. But I would say specifically, Virgil Abloh, he's a guy from Chicago. He makes Off-White. So Off-White does a collaboration with Nike, and his shoes are really popular right now. I would say Kanye West, another Chicago guy, he does the Yeezys.
Yeah.
His shoes are very popular as well. So I would say those shoes are Jordans. And then also Dunks have become a resurgence in the sneaker community where like a lot of skateboarders and like bikers, like BMX bikers and trick bikers, they wear those sneakers as well. So those three are the most popular that we see. But obviously, I think I would say Jordans are the most popular by far.
Well, you got a lot of room to grow. I mean, you obviously know your shoes, but well, you get somebody that knows haute couture. You get somebody that knows high-quality dresses or handbags or purses. I mean, there's obviously a secondary market out there. And it's intriguing because one would think, oh, well, what is that shoe worth? You don't care what the monetary value is. You're simply saying if you want to give that up and get it, or if you want to get that shoe and you've got something to give for it, you'll just unite the two. You'll just take your $30 and let you two go on your way.
Absolutely. And they can negotiate the transaction as they fit. So sometimes this transaction is not one for one. So sometimes you do run into a situation where somebody's like, hey, I do want that shoe, but I don't feel like the trade is as even on one end. So just like with bartering or anything else, you can add another shoe, you can add other things to the trade. Because the goal is eventually to get it where you can trade whatever you want to get what you want.
So I'll take your Jordans, you take my old canvas Converse, my Chuck Taylors, and I'll throw in my dad's car. How about that?
No, that's ideal. So that's where I want the platform to go, is where you'll be able to trade a car or a lawnmower or whatever it may be, either out of want or necessity, for something that somebody else may want or need as well.
I don't think that's such a crazy idea, Chris Holloway, CEO and founder of House of Trade, houseoftradeinc.com.
Yes.
houseoftradeinc.com. Hey, good luck to you, Chris. Let's visit again down the road. Tell us how business is going.
I will. Thank you, and I appreciate the time and speaking with me.
Yeah, likewise. 1245 on WGN. The business news continues on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago Ventures, a local venture capital firm, has raised $63 million to invest in startups. It's one of about a dozen venture funds that write checks of more than $1 million to startups in Chicago. Cranes reports Chicago Ventures has made 11 investments out of the new fund so far. Among those new investments are Copilot and Interior Define. Some of its best-known previous investments include Cameo, M1 Finance, and Project 44. A new report says the Chicago metro area saw more corporate investment than any other city in the country. This is the eighth consecutive year that the area has seen more new and expanding corporate locations. Site Selection magazine says that includes headquarters expansions, new manufacturing plants, and research and development locations. The report says there were 327 business expansions and relocations in the Chicago metro area in 2020. Add all that up and it comes to about $6 billion in investments. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And there's Amy Guth. Hi, Amy.
Hi there. I hate to say Steve Alexander the way I always like hearing from him.
And now we have just a minute or two left, but so I was just trying to figure out what that Gatorade story was. What's going on there?
Yeah, I thought this was such an interesting story. Essentially, Gatorade is kind of upping the game here, and they've created an app and a patch for people to help monitor their hydration. Of course, ostensibly that's to sell them more products so they can be more hydrated. But you have a little patch and you wear it on the inside of your arm, and it'll collect sweat samples, and it translates to the app and tells you what your hydration level is. So if you're, you know, out, say, playing tennis or you're running or something like that, it'll monitor your hydration throughout your experience exercising to let you know, hey, may want to have some more electrolytes, may want to have some more water, hey, slow it down, things like that, which I thought was a really interesting kind of a little advancement there for Gatorade.
Yeah, I don't want to mock it. I think there's another way, and it is when you're thirsty, drink some liquid, and when you're not thirsty, don't drink liquid, but maybe there's more of a science to it than I'm making it sound like.
Yeah, I mean, they say once you feel thirsty, it's too late. You should have already been drinking water and hydrating by then, so this is Gatorade's attempt to help you do that, which, interesting, you know, Gatorade here, just in the beverage space, we knew that the parent company was making some changes and trying to focus more on the most profitable sectors of business of their portfolio. But moving into, you know, the tech space and the wearable space is, I don't think, necessarily one we saw coming.
And maybe not a bad idea. Okay, Amy, we're short of time, as you know, because of some tech problems. But talk to me about Target. 21%. Yes. That looks good, doesn't it?
Target has really, done some amazing numbers that are out today. They have released how the fourth quarter went. And one detail of that I thought was really interesting is that 2020 sales at Target grew by more than $15 billion, which is greater than its total sales growth over the last 11 years, to really kind of put that in perspective. So shares were down a little bit midday, but their earnings topped Wall Street estimates. It got such a lift from the strong holiday season, but also from just how many people turned to e-commerce. And Target, as you and I have talked about, is one of those places like Walmart where it eliminates a stop. You can go there, you can buy pants and, you know, plants and, you know, cleaning products and food and all the kind of things just in one stop. So those kind of places really performed well during stay home orders and things like that.
I didn't know Target was doing that well. Its 2020 sales grew by more than $15 billion, greater than its total sales growth, you said, over the previous.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. 11
the
years.
Fourth quarter profits were up 66%. That's their report earlier today. And sales up overall 21%, so completely topping Wall Street expectations.
Is that stimulus checks people were spending there?
Yeah, that's the speculation from a lot of economists that people had stimulus checks. They were able to put that money in there. But that's also the holiday season. You know, that's also people buying groceries there. That's people, you know, buying, you know, things for their home because they're home more, like electronics, things like that.
Okay, more time next time. Thanks for your patience. Thanks for joining us, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.
You betcha.